Welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. In this podcast, we dig into the exact playbooks that ABM practitioners are using today to get their first ABM program off the ground. We'll dig into how they're using their current tech stack in order to create scrappy programs that rely more on creativity than new technologies. So if you're looking for how to get ABM off the ground in your organization in the next 90 days, let's dive into this episode.
Hello and welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. This is your host, Mason Cosby, and today I'm joined by Josh Ganey, who is the go-to-market lead over at Chasm. Josh, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
For those of you that don't know, Josh and I actually live in the same neighborhood, so we have already joked about the idea that we could have just walked down the street. But no, today we're still going to do a remote recording because my studio is only set up for one person. Thank you, Josh, for being patient with me on that front. That said, I'm excited to dig into it. We've been taking a slight journey on the show where we're focused more on the development side and actually talking with people that have led SDR or outbound teams specifically, because what we're seeing is so many SDR teams historically, and I say the past 2 or 3 years, have been very well fed by inbound marketing programs. And we're seeing a lot of now SDRs that are having to shift from qualification to outbound prospecting. And for me, that's been a rough transition. So I am excited to chat with you. You built a fantastic outbound program over at Authenticate before moving over to Chasm. So really what we want to do is just dig into how'd you build it? How did it work? What was awesome? What was hard? And what are some lessons that people could take away? So how's that sound?
Well, hopefully I can do it justice, and I can go as deep as we want or as shallow as we want. It just depends on where this goes, but I'm happy to talk about the secret sauce and what we did and how we did it. And yeah, hopefully from this, other people can take some pieces of it and apply it to their team, whether it's inbound or outbound.
I love it. Well, one of the biggest questions for anyone when they're doing any kind of qualification or outbound program is just pretty simple. Who do I call? Who do I go after? Who do I send an email to? And there's lots of schools of thought. So I'm curious for you, how did you actually help your SDRs prioritize their outbound efforts?
I think really the first step that you should take before you start calling anybody is getting the right SDR hire profile in your pipeline. So understanding, you know, how technical of a person you really need on your team to talk through the product that you're offering is really critical. And just really trying to find people that are willing to do hard work. And as we all know, outbound it's a game of numbers, but it's a game of follow-up. You have to understand who you're targeting, how you're targeting them, through which channels you're targeting them. And you have to do all of them all the time really well. And you're going to make mistakes along the way, but having somebody with a purpose that's driven, for this particular example, that really loved or enjoyed being in cybersecurity, helped fuel that kind of ambition to help them become successful. As far as how we target or who we were targeting, what we looked at is the titles. That was most important. And we looked at the size of the company and we looked at the industry. And as much as we want to kind of understand who to target, we needed to broadly more understand who not to target. And that really helped us save a lot of time.
Well, that framing of just like negative attributes, it's one of the things that we've actually just added to our own ICP, are actually things we're not looking for, and saying, yeah, hey, if this is not you, that's okay. Or if this is you and it's something that we're not looking for, that's okay. We're just not gonna be a good fit. And essentially what I have seen is when people don't do that, they end up getting somebody into a meeting with an AE that the AE immediately disqualifies. And as a result, it builds distrust between SDR and AE, which makes it more challenging in the future. So I love that call out. How do you think about actually identifying those things we're not targeting?
It's a great question. And I'll give the credit where it's due to our team and my previous head of sales, Rick Nee. We basically, just a very simple way to a simple concept to understand who's a good fit, we prioritize them through here's an A meeting, here's a C meeting, and then here's an F meeting. And that's a disqualification meeting. And then, so there are certain attributes within an A meeting, whether it's the right title, it's the right industry, it's the right size of the company. And then once those top three things were hit, when they actually schedule a meeting and have a conversation with an AE, were they engaged? Did they talk about budget? Do they actually have the workflow that makes sense for that particular product? And as they go through the conversation, if they bring multiple team members to that call, that's a great sign. If they go directly into a, like a proof of concept, that's another sign of validation that the SDR did their job and that the AE also did their job, because the SDR only has so much that they can control. And there's a lot of pressure on that for sure, but they're not going to create a miracle. Like, just getting someone on a call right now is a miracle. So making sure that they're aligned correctly with that criteria that we set for that, for the team that we train them on, is really helpful. And then a C meeting, they're not great, they're not bad, they're kind of in between. And mostly it's because of how that call went, not necessarily based on the targeting by the SDR. And then the F meeting is just basically you're hunting somebody, and that's a incident response team, and you, for some reason, the SDR brought in someone from marketing. Like, why would you do that? Not the right target. And a step further, you map that grading criteria into your CRM, and you tag those opportunities based off of A, C, or F. You'll start to realize, we started to realize, that you can obviously run a report, a simple report, map that against your closed one, map that against your average deal cycle or your average deal size, and you'll be able to see that the grading criteria actually did work. And the majority of the meetings that were graded A from the first meeting set by the AE had a much higher chance of closing, whether it was 3 months down the road, 6 months, or 9 months. So that's how we did it. It was a trial and error. Just really quick, we didn't try to do this ourselves as the SDR team. We brought in different stakeholders and the AE team together, that so everybody had an understanding of what we were doing. People were bought in, and then the AEs understood when they actually do get a meeting from the SDR that we actually did the due diligence that we were supposed to.
I specifically love the call out of, we got AE buy-in on the criteria, because the other thing that I'm hearing is, like, an A meeting means that everybody did their job. A C meeting actually sounds like maybe SDRs could have done a little bit better, but it actually maybe AE coaching a little bit of how do we make some of these meetings better. And then an F meeting was more the SDR, this meeting shouldn't have happened. So it also sounds like it assigns what ownership should happen at a leadership level on coaching and training their individual teams. So it made it even easier on that front.
Yeah. And you can also tie that into SDR compensation. We did not do that while I was there, but if you were able to schedule an A meeting, which was mainly in the enterprise space, we could start to taper in SDRs that were enterprise, that were only scheduled, like which SDRs were scheduling more A meetings versus C. I mean, you can really start to decipher your program in many different ways, and then map that in against closed one. You know, you can start to see which SDRs are doing a high level of their job versus which ones are doing C's and F's and having the most no-shows on the team and stuff like that. Yeah, very helpful for many different ways, many different use cases.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I often address when I talk about alignment between marketing, sales, and BD. It's just like, what's the incentive structure? Because how you incentivize is typically how they will then act. So if you have a comp plan that's misaligned with what you actually want them to do, they're going to obviously do whatever they get paid to do. So maybe fix that.
Exactly right.
So I want to, most SDR or outbound teams are typically using the following channels in some fashion of just LinkedIn. They're using outbound email. They're using outbound calls. They may be doing in-person visits, but those are typically the four channels that I'm aware of when it comes to an outbound team. What channel mix were you guys using to actually engage these audiences and get these meetings booked?
It's a great question. We tried to keep it small because it gets complicated real fast. When you put human beings into a, everybody acts differently, reacts differently. So the most simple way we tried to do it was just give them a couple different tools and a repetitive model, a framework that they can apply. And we call it freedom within a framework. So we did use LinkedIn mostly, and then we used Zoom Info, and then we also had a sales engagement platform called Outreach, and then we also had Salesforce as well as our CRM. But we were very reluctant to bring in automation tools. Now, this is just helpful for us. If someone or another team or a different company has a really good intent data or an automation tool that they've used to accelerate some of their stuff, that's great. But for us, we really wanted to slow it down and the process be the accelerator, not the tool. Because if the SDR team was, if they had bad habits or they weren't calling the right way, they weren't asking the right questions. If we just helped them accelerate that, they were just going to do that at a higher scale, and we didn't want that. So we didn't really have any automation. Everything was manual, especially when you look at LinkedIn and Sales Navigator. You can't really automate your messaging. I think there are some tools now that you can plug and play with, but for the most part, we wanted it manual so people had a chance to feel what they're doing, whether it's working or not working. And then it was easier for us to track as well. So we kept it really simple, very simple.
I love that phrase of we use the process as the accelerator. It's something we also say to our clients, well, why are we scaling something we don't know works? Let's maybe make sure this thing works before we then figure out how do we scale it massively. But that's not often the case. A lot of people just focus on massive scale. And especially for you in cybersecurity, like people you're selling into don't really love when you have tons and tons of access to their data and use that to market to them. So yeah, I love the, it felt also like just knowing the audience well to say, if we screw this up, we've burned an account entirely.
Oh yeah, that's a very good point. The cybersecurity field, oftentimes they are trained on social engineering, and we all get social engineered sometimes, whether it's on LinkedIn or a different social media platform, someone trying to convince you to do something or take action or schedule here, click this link, and you're constantly fighting that battle. But you're also on the other side, you can't be too human either with the cybersecurity people, because if you're too like friendly, then that just comes off weird and it's not professional and it's not straightforward. And there is definitely a balance that you have to take, and one that we found out that we did really well, and we did scale it eventually. But yeah, very, very good point. Very good point.
So I'm curious, how did you engage the audience? Because especially if they're used to being socially engineered and they're making sure that they don't get just a bunch of phishing. Like I actually got a phishing email yesterday from another agency owner that was claimed to be another agency owner. And it was like a contract. So I like screenshot it. I was like, is this you? Like, why are you sending me a contract? And they're like, oh no, it's totally a spam. And I was like, wow, that's insane. And it's getting to be really good, if I'm being entirely honest with you. So yeah. I mean, obviously we don't want to necessarily lead in with the like, click this link, go here. So what did you do? What did you do to actually engage the audience?
So there was a time when I'd say 75 or 80% of our leads that we were bringing into the funnel were from LinkedIn. And I'll get to that later. We didn't necessarily think that cold calling was actually going to work with this type of persona that we were really aggressively going after. So the best way, in my opinion, that I found helpful, your first message that you send someone, it needs to be very straightforward, but it also needs to just be a little bit personalized in terms of the team that you're targeting, but then also hit the top three points that you are trying to get them to understand. So like in our example was, you know, whether it's a fraud team, a threat team, anti-money laundering team, they need dark web access. They need off-network special web access for online anonymous online research. And then a managed attribution component. We knew that if we said those words on a repetitive basis and we spread the net across the enterprise, we would get a certain number of people that would say, I'm interested. And this was also at the time, this was in 2020. So this was also at the time people were at home, mostly working from home. And in the cybersecurity sector, a lot of folks that spent a lot of time in the public DOD space and a federal space, they were migrating and shifting into the private space, working at these top tech companies, fintech companies, and IT and manufacturing. And so we hit them at the right time. It was a good time, but we also had the discipline and the nuance of understanding really what they wanted to do. And I'll just say this, none of that would have happened. We didn't have an AE on our side to really help us understand that. If we didn't connect with the AE team and they were honest and helping us about how we should do our job, I don't think it would have ever been successful. So we were very lucky from that aspect to get support from the AE team, and they wanted support because it supported them. So it's not like that everywhere, but that really did help us propel in the right direction.
Very cool. So I mean, it sounds like you knew the right messaging, you then asked questions and you didn't require anything of them to click. And then based on their responses, you were able to connect with an AE super simply. So purely just like good messaging templates that resonated with the audience.
Good messaging templates. And when someone actually did indicate that they were interested, ask them for their work email. You don't go back and forth trying to figure out a date and time. Yep. You already have their interest. You got their work email, just send them the invite. And a lot of times they'll either accept or they'll just suggest a new date and time that works better for them. But getting off of one platform, getting away from a social media LinkedIn platform onto a calendar, changed the game. If you could do that really quickly, the SDRs that, what time zone are you in? Central. Okay. What blocks work best for you? And it's like, they won't come back to you, man. Like just,
yep.
Get the invite, get the email, send me an invite, and then hopefully they show up to the call and confirm it 24 hours before.
Super smart.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, you said if you were casting a net across the enterprise that then resulted in a certain number of meetings. I'm curious, how did you specifically measure success for the program?
We measured success on the program based on the grading scale. So how many A meetings were we bringing into the pipeline versus C and F? Secondly, measuring how many opportunities in the enterprise that each SDR was bringing in. Everyone says you need to map that against closed one, but sometimes that's just, it's hard to do. I mean, it's not hard to do technically, but there's a million reasons why a deal won't come in. And it's not necessarily the SDR's fault that it didn't sell. And then third, I think the third thing that really was important, if I remember this right, was the onboarding. How quickly can we get an SDR to book the right type of meeting, doing it the right way? Once we figured that out, we really knew we could really scale this. And we did this on a small scale, two or three SDRs, and I was one of the SDRs. And then 2 years later, 2.5 years later, we had a team of 25, 29 on the SDR team, which was almost the biggest department of the company. Wow. So, it was a wild ride. It was a lot of work, a lot of onboarding, a lot of attrition, good and bad. One of the other metrics that we saw through our program, if they could hit their activity and bring in the right meetings, it was a leading success factor that they would be able to do a renewals role or account executive or account management. So we had a lot of the company, when they mirrored a lot of the SDRs, they were all over in these different departments. And it was such a morale booster to the team. Like, we will promote you if you do your job role well and you hit quota and you do it well. We're doing it right now. So it wasn't a, we'll promote you if you do this kind of conversation and it never comes to fruition. We were doing it at least on a monthly basis. And we were also weeding out the folks that weren't the right fit. And that was the hard part. That was a really hard part for us to swallow. But once we figured that piece out and getting the hard conversations out of the way, that really helped us too. So that was a mouthful. I hope that helps.
No, super helpful. It sounds, again, it's the obvious for an SDR. It's like, we got meetings booked and we had engagement. Yeah. But then also looking at it through the lens of, well, how quickly do they transition into a proof of concept? And like, then you've actually gotten really qualified opportunities. But then the other thing that I hadn't thought through is just, you measured success on the SDR's ramp time and could easily then determine, this is going to be a great fit SDR that will become a high producer of meetings, or they may not be a great fit here. I've not heard somebody talk through that. So that's super helpful as a metric for success. Last couple of questions would just be, as you look at, again, you scaled from essentially two or three SDRs where you were one of them to then leading a team of 25 to 30 SDRs within, would you say, 2.5 years?
2.5 years. Yeah.
So that's insane. Mm-hmm. So I'm confident there were some unexpected roadblocks that kind of popped up along the way. So what were some of the things that were challenging that you, looking back, wish you had known before you went into it?
Really, when I look back and I really start to think in deeply about what was the hardest part about scaling an SDR team, particularly an outbound team, was becoming a manager of managers. That was really difficult. When you, going back to what I was saying before about the attrition, when you hire somebody, and this isn't like ruthless culture, this was just part of the deal. If you're not going to hit your metrics within the first 30 days that you're hired, you never will. I mean, that's just the truth. And you have to come quickly to that reality, or you're just going to have a lot of SDRs on your team that are really low performers, and it's just going to devalue what you're trying to do. And so when you have managers that have done very well, right, they've done everything we've asked them to do, they've gone above and beyond, they're writing blogs, they're running their own, they're taking initiative, you want to promote that, right? And put that as a cornerstone in your department for other people to look at and like, oh, I want to be like that. Well, when you have that mindset, them accountable to hold their team accountable was a whole different ball game that I was not used to. I could do it myself and it was hard for me, but training others to see how it was going to affect them. And this was going back to what you're saying earlier about compensation, how you're going to compensate managers is going to be key on how well your team performs over time. And, you know, if they have low performers on your team, it should hurt them. And it should affect how they get paid, but also it should affect how they run their business within a business. So I think just looking back, I think that was the hardest part for me. And no one wants to have the hard conversation with someone that's struggling. And it's always looking at it from a lens of how can I help this person be successful, give them grace, but also hold them accountable to the job. It's just a hard line to hold. And with your heart, also keep them accountable. It's hard to do. It's still hard to do.
Yeah. I think that is something I've had to learn past 2 years of building this business is
it's not that
crazy hard when you're like always in it with people to essentially it's peer accountability at that point. It's like, hey, I really need you to do your job so I can do my job. It's different and it's way more challenging when you're like holding someone accountable to hold their team accountable.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a great call out. Josh, before we close out, as you're thinking about standing up a program like this, is there another parting wisdom that you'd give somebody that, again, you wish you had known before you were to go on that 2.5 year wild ride?
I think I was very lucky that the company and my head of sales gave us patience. They gave us patience to figure this out, because if we were able to figure this out, which we already did on a very small scale, we just needed to scale it even higher and bigger, the sky was the limit. And I think when you are trying to stand up an outbound program, a company, I think it's really important that you get buy-in from multiple different stakeholders, not just within sales. I think that's really important because sometimes your head of sales might leave, they get fired, or strategies change. And so one thing I would suggest that we started doing towards the end before I ultimately left, bring in product managers to talk about the product of your company to the SDRs, bring in an engineering team, bring in the CSAM team, bring in the head of sales, get engagement from different stakeholders within the company so that they, one, the SDRs get executive exposure to other departments, gives them a reason to work harder, but also from the company standpoint so that they can understand this is a revenue team. This isn't some team just calling random prospects off of Zoom info. Like, we're bringing in a lot of revenue into this company, net new logos that are expanding 50% of the revenue now. So it's important for them to really just understand that this is a true revenue building team. And it's not just a team that doesn't know what they're doing and constantly hiring and firing. It's a culture builder. And if it's done right, those other teams that you're bringing into the fold will benefit from that. That's what I would say.
Yeah. I love that call out. I mean, especially for so many brands, the SDR can be the first point of contact. So if you have someone that doesn't represent the brand well, that's a great fit customer's only point of reference for your brand. So just, I think that's a great call out of helping the SDR get broader exposure across the business to understand how the business at a leadership level addresses their customers, thinks about the business, thinks about the problems that you guys solve. So I think that's a great call. And then you also referenced, like, SDRs got promoted. So I'm sure some of those leaders were looking at SDRs and saying, I want that one on our team. So that's amazing. So Josh, thanks so much for joining me today. If people want to find out more about you, where would you point them?
You can find me on LinkedIn. I'm all over LinkedIn, Josh Ganey. I have a profile there. I'm active. I'm on there every day. That's probably the best way you can find me. I think my personal email address is on there as well.
Very cool. Well, again, Josh, thanks so much for joining me today. This has been Scrappy ABM. We'll see you guys in the next one. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. If you're looking for more content just like this, I highly recommend you go subscribe to our newsletter. We release weekly playbooks so that you have the actionable ways in which you can start to build an ABM program today. Just go to scrappyabm.com/newsletter to subscribe. And if you enjoyed this episode, we'd really appreciate it if you'd leave a 5-star review and hit the notification bell so you never miss an episode. I look forward to seeing you in the next one.